Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every episode, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe or rate it on your podcast app of choice, support the podcast financially through Red Circle, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where we cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imp's WWE Adventure. You can become part of the Social Suplex community by joining our Discord and check out the awesome Match Guide and Social Suplex merch on Chopped Tees. Links for all of these things are in the podcast description. My guest for today is Andy from the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast, and we're discussing Chris Jericho versus Bryan Danielson from AEW Grand Slam Tournament of Champions at Dynamite on the September the 14th, 2022. How are you going today, Andy?
I'm very good, thanks. Early morning, snow outside. Yeah, it's good.
Excellent. It's lovely to hear. Lovely to hear some snow outside. It's coming into the Christmas season for us in Australia. That means sweltering weather of, you know, plus 30, sometimes plus 40 every single day. For you guys in the UK, it's, you know, lovely and chill. You know, sitting in front of heaters, having mince pies and Yorkshire puddings and all those delightful things.
You say lovely and chill, I say miserable.
Yeah, I must admit, I've been to England a couple of times. We're talking beforehand. I've got British family, and I've been to England a couple of times for Christmas. And getting dark at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that where I live. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, and then we have the issues with boilers being broke at the moment, and yeah, it's just cold. Electric blankets everywhere.
Yeah, and the price of energy. Jeez, God, we're old.
Oh, God, yeah, this don't get me started on that. I thought we were talking about wrestling, not politics.
Yeah. Well, we are here to talk about Chris Jericho versus Bryan Danielson, of course, from the AEW Grand Slam Tournament of Champions. I'm really keen to dig into this match, Andy. It's one we sort of came up with going back and forth, but I think there's a lot we can talk about in and around this match, and particularly talking about Chris Jericho. But before we get into it all, because you are a new guest to this podcast, I did want to ask, how did you get into AEW, Andy?
Well, I was originally a WWF fan as a kid, for my sins. And then I got into WCW in the 90s and became more of a WCW-focused guy. And then obviously when WWE, whatever it was at the time, I can't remember, when they bought them out because Eric Bischoff shit the bed, that then transitioned me back into a WWE fan. And I was a fan on and off till probably 2007, maybe 2006. And I just fell out of it then, you know, whether it was just, you know, work, getting more into UFC, whatever, I can't remember the time, but I fell out of it completely. And I got to a point where I didn't watch wrestling for like 10 years. So I missed a lot of the big years of CM Punk and things like that. You know, a lot of people talk about John Cena as well. I missed all of his big stuff. And I had no interest in it at all until I caught this news article about Jericho turning up at All In, masked. And, you know, at the end of a show, and I was reading about how he did it with the fact that they'd had a Fozzy gig that night and he'd flew straight from the gig there. And it got me intrigued, but I wasn't fully involved until that moment with the little bit of the bubbly promo. And I caught that. Someone sent it to me and I watched that, and it was one of the best promos, like live promos I'd ever seen. And I was like, I need to watch this. And from that moment on, I was hooked. I started watching it every every episode, and Wednesday just became my favorite night of the week, mainly because the bins get collected, but also because AEW is on, you know, so, and that shows my age, you know, the bins. But no, it's great. I love it. It's I'm an absolute diehard now because of that, and that's took me back into a lot of other wrestling. You know, I'm quite into the British wrestling scene again now because that's really picking up. There's some great stuff going on there. Yeah, I've met a lot of cool people through AEW, and obviously, you know, started a podcast with a bunch of guys. So It's great. You know, it's been fantastic, to be honest. And it also took me down the rabbit hole of a lot of New Japan stuff as well, which I hadn't previously been into at all. I'd also gone back down and watched a fair bit of NXT Black and Gold as well for some of the matches people had recommended there. So it's great. It's opened up a whole new kind of world for me, really, and a lot of things that I've missed over the previous 10 years, most of which thankfully seem shite, but the good stuff has been since. But, you know, a few things aside,
I'll say there was a lot of good stuff in the 2010s. The 2010s gets a bad rap. Even the 2010s WWE gets a worse rap than what it deserves. There is some absolute there's some absolute garbage in there. Don't get me wrong. but there's also some absolute greatness as well, particularly around, you know, like my favorite wrestler, Dean Ambrose, but even Chris Jericho. Like Chris Jericho was still doing some good stuff through the 2010s. But yeah, it's interesting that great promo that he cut after he won the title at All Out, of course. So that's, I'm guessing that's the one you're referencing, where he, you know, where he takes the mic and he goes through and he goes, "Young Bucks, no handshakes for me, Young Bucks. Scorpio Sky, you'll never get this title. Why are you looking at me, backstage production hand?" And then he gets in there and he's like, "This is all the thanks I get, a little bit of the bubbly," and we're off to the races. He launched a wine label over that.
it was fantastic. And the whole having a whinge about the state of the salami, you know, and look, this is what the champ gets, cheap salami. And
sitting there warm in the thing. Who hasn't been to an office party where they've had that exact platter? And it's just sitting out there and you can see the sweat coming off the salami. You still eat it anyway, though. You know it's going to make you sick, but you have some anyway.
He's got the, "Hey, Bucky boys."
Yeah, that's right.
"Look, yes, that's right. Chris Jericho was your champ. Where were you when I was bleeding to death?"
Yeah.
That was great. It's a hell of a promo. Yeah, he even says something about buying Pillman's hair.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Oh, it's like it was so different to like what you'd seen before in, you know, you're used to, if you'd watched, so having watched a bit of New Japan, I was used to sort of the more free-ranging wild promos that happen over there, you know, in the post-match press conference areas. And, you know, you had John Moxley during the G1 that year sort of just like going on these unhinged rants, which were great. But to see it on American TV, incredible. And then, you know, went crazy from there with the little bit of the bubbly and launched 1,000 memes. But to kind of segue a little bit and put you over a little bit, I must mention your podcast is started just this year, the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast. I'm a really big fan of it. I really enjoy listening to it. It reminds me a lot of to the people who listen to Social Suplex and haven't listened to the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast. It reminds me a lot of One Nation Radio. Like, you guys come from totally different backgrounds and it sounds totally different, but it reminds me of One Nation Radio in that it sounds like friends having a chat and bringing all of who they are, not just, you know, they're not just wrestling fans, but all of who you are to this chat that you're having, kicking back ideas, having jokes, laughing at each other a bit, not taking things too seriously, but still getting into it and really getting stuck in on a granular level. And so I got to put over the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I do disagree with this not taking it too seriously part, because my investigation into David Arquette was very serious.
very good. Well, look, for the people who haven't checked it out, jump in there. You could probably go back to, what episode was that you did the David Arquette, what number?
It was 16, but we added a little bit straight from Bratislava on 17 while I was away.
There you go. But well, no. Look, if you get some bumps on that one, you've got the match guide bump in the episode, hopefully.
and you're going to join us in the new year as well, don't forget.
Yeah, hopefully. Yep, that's the plan. That's the plan so far. When I've got a bit of time off over Christmas, I'll we'll work out the time zone differences and make it work, make it happen. I'll have to have some drinks, I think, to join you guys. It feels like the kind of atmosphere where, you know, this is serious stuff we do here on the Match Guide, but might be able to have a beer or two with you. the magic, Andy. I've got an edit button. We record it weeks ahead of time. as you're about to find out, I'm like the Wizard of Oz behind the cloak, behind the curtain. you're about to get a peek to it. But let's get on to the match that, or at least the people who are in the match that we talked about. You already talked a little bit about Jericho and how he kind of was part of the reason you became a fan of AEW. What's your history with Bryan Danielson and Chris Jericho, Andy?
Chris Jericho from WCW, basically. I remember being on the message boards back then in probably 97, something like that. And just like everyone was so like Jericho was so over and Bischoff just did not want to know. And I know like in his book, he's talked about this since how it was like probably Hogan and stuff, you know, kind of, you know, holding him back. But like the thing that stuck out to me was the feud he tried to generate with Bill Goldberg. Like Jericho is the perfect example of maximizing your screen time. Mm. Something that Harley Cameron at the moment is doing to a T. But he would go out there with no real backing from Bischoff or anything. Nothing from the booking team. And he would make things happen. I mean, the Dean Malenko thing, you know, the man of 1,001 holds. Mm. And he's just reading off the holds. Armbar. You know, it's just, it's comedy gold. It's brilliant. And it made you interested in him. You know, this whole thing of him feuding with Cruiserweights when he was clearly bigger than him. The whole Juventud Guerrero thing with his mask, it was fantastic. And the man went out there and just, he grabbed your attention whether you wanted it or not. I was just a big fan from day one, to be honest, with Chris Jericho. Well, I say day one to me, which was when he was in WCW. And WCW with Bischoff, I genuinely think one of the biggest mistakes they made, and it led to the downfall, was not pushing Chris Jericho. Not giving him that Goldberg. He was happy enough to get squashed by Goldberg, he said. Mm. You know, he wanted Goldberg to spear him out of his boots. He wanted his boots to be stuck to the ground so that when Goldberg speared him, he flew out of his boots. And that would have been brilliant. And they just did not want to know. So they kept doing what they were doing, let his contract run down. And by the time they realized, oh, shit, this guy's got it. It was too late. You know, Vince had already had his eyes on him at that point. And obviously the Y2J debut was fantastic. It was the promo with the Rock is iconic. The Rock put him over as well. Jericho talks quite a lot about how the Rock, you know, the Rock was great, was that he was really up for doing that. And the, you know, the first undisputed champion, the man's an absolute legend. Like, and Paul Walter Hauser recently did an interview with Chris Van Vliet, and he was talking about Chris Jericho. And he said, I think he's one of these guys that when he retires, people actually give him his flowers and realize just how good he was over the time. You know, he's like the David Bowie of wrestling for me, in terms of the amount of reinventions he's managed to do. And in this match, there's a point I want to make as well about another small little thing he does to differentiate his character. But I'm a huge fan, like I always have been. You know, even now, despite, you know, him not being, well, despite the fact that he's 54, there's still some things he does where you're like, oh, that was excellent.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned just a couple things you mentioned there. That feud with Goldberg it's so interesting how Chris Jericho got so early the modern paradigm of how being a wrestling TV star works, like how you can make it work for yourself, in that you don't need to win everything. You know, we talked about, when we were talking about Swerve in a few episodes ago, we talked about how, like, he is a guy who just realized, I can lose, even if I lose all the time, if I'm on TV, I'm on TV doing great work, that will ingratiate me with the audience. And he used that to lose his way up the card and into the becoming world champion. And Chris Jericho, he realized that in the 90s with Goldberg, because as he said there, he's like, I just want to have the greatest squash match ever. I don't care if you destroy me. The fact that you destroyed me it'll be good for me because I'm on TV in this thing that people love. And he realized that in the 90s in WCW, where like you've got Hogan and Kevin Nash running around and Goldberg too, running around, you know, largely influenced by Goldberg, to be fair to him, influenced by the culture that he was in. You know, these people, Hogan and Nash, politicking for wins and protecting of their character in that way. Whereas Jericho realized, if, you know, I'm not at the top of the card, I can lose my way up this card, though, and into the spotlight. I can keep myself in the spotlight by that.
That's an excellent way of putting it. Lose his way up the card. That's exactly what he did.
And he realized that so early compared to most wrestlers who, like, a lot of wrestlers are still – I was just listening to a thing literally today about how there's, like, a lot of indie wrestlers. The major wrestling promotions are finding it difficult to get indie wrestlers to come on and do jobs because these indie wrestlers don't want to be seen doing jobs on TV. And it's like – the biggest crowd you're going to wrestle in front of is 300 people, and you've got the opportunity to wrestle in front of hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, over a million people in the case of the WWE. Why do you not want to do that? Like, just make it a memorable job.
Do you know who's an excellent example of this? Recent example.
Yep.
Not just Harley Cameron, who, like I say, she's on screen for 10 seconds. You're glued to the screen for 10 seconds. But the Outrunners.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Outrunners. For the last 2 years, they've just been doing jobs wherever they can get them. And they've got over by doing that. I mean, I remember, I like, sorry to go off topic here, but I found an old message I'd sent to a friend of mine. And it's probably 18 months ago where I'm talking about, mate, on AEW Dark, the Outrunners, this gimmick is so bad, it's good. And they're just jobbers, but it's brilliant. And like they've rode that wave, or, you know, with their jet skis all the way to what they currently are. And that's another good example of what Jericho was doing back in the 90s. You know, it's laughable that people actually do compare him to Hogan at times, because he couldn't be further from the truth. If you ever listen to him talk, he's quite open about the fact that he doesn't want to win and he doesn't need to win. You know, it's all about just kind of being involved and kind of trying to get other people over with what he can contribute, or what he thinks he can contribute. Sometimes it may not always be right, but, you know, he does try. Like,
you called him the David Bowie of wrestling, which is an interesting comparison. I just wanted to put a pin in that, because I've got an interesting take on Jericho and his reinvention that we'll talk about when we get into this match a little bit more. But I'm curious, Andy, so you dipped out of wrestling in 2006 and didn't get back into wrestling until 2019. What was your first impression of Bryan Danielson? When was the first time you heard the name, I guess, Daniel Bryan, if you're coming in 2019? What did you hear about this, you know, guy who had an absolutely legendary career, but in pretty much all of the years that you were not watching wrestling and having nothing to do with it?
Well, I went down a rabbit hole one side. Was it a main WrestleMania main event?
Yes, so 36, I think, 37, maybe. When Edge and Roman Reigns.
That's right, yeah. And I was just intrigued by the fact that he'd been retired for so long. So I went down a rabbit hole of looking into Bryan Danielson stuff, and obviously that took me into Ring of Honor stuff, which, like I say, the last kind of 5 years or so have just been, you know, sending me into a world of wrestling that I'd never really seen or heard of. So I'm like, that Bryan Danielson probably is, it's a tough one, because for me the GOAT is probably Flair, but and that's probably an age thing, but I just think what he did in the territories, I'm not sure if anybody else could do that, you know, what he managed to do. But that said, I don't know, some days I'm looking at him thinking, like, Bryan Danielson is actually the best of all time. Well, it's hard because it's different eras, isn't it? So they have different objectives, really, in terms of their wrestling career and what they have to do. Could Bryan Danielson go and wrestle 350 odd days a year? He probably could. Could he have done it as well as Flair? Who knows? Could Flair do what Bryan Danielson's doing now? Probably not. So I don't know. It's a tough one. But he's in the conversation for the greatest of all time. So he's one of the best sellers I've ever seen. Which, you know, obviously that's quite a lot of that goes into this match. He's brilliant. I was distraught when John Moxley put a plastic bag over his head.
That was an incredible incredible angle, though.
Angry is what I was. Yeah, it was great. it was exactly what it was supposed to be. It's supposed to make me angry and depressed.
Yeah. I was zoning out, because the reason I was thinking I was zoning out was I struggle to, like, say, oh, this person's the GOAT, because the more I've learned about wrestling, the more I've understood how little I know. I find it really hard to say, like, this person is objectively the greatest of all time, because simply I have not watched enough to declare who I'd say is the greatest. For me, definitely when I'm talking this generation that I have, I do feel comfortable because I've watched so much. The two that that always come to mind for me, and there's different, is they're different and on different levels. There's three probably actually. Okada, Omega, and Danielson. And then I also probably would chuck Tanahashi in there, although he's sort of came a little bit before those other three. And for me, like, Omega probably has the highest ceiling, like, in terms of the absolute upper level, and we're talking the greatest of the greatest here. So, like, the absolute upper level, you talking like the Okada trilogy, the Osprey matches, the matches with Naito that I've seen him have, just other at the very peak, I'd say at Omega, but longevity wise, it's really hard to go past Danielson, who's done it not just in a short period of time, which Omega was at that very tippy top, even though, you know, he's got a career that spans a long time with lots of great matches throughout. Omega's peak years were at a level that no one else I think has reached, but only for a shorter period of time, whereas Danielson is spread out for so long, he was able to produce at the absolute highest level that, you know, very few other wrestlers at all have ever reached. And he managed to do it across multiple promotions, on many, many different size stages, different styles. He has a very compelling case to be the greatest. He's certainly the greatest of his generation, against Omega and Okada and probably Tanahashi as well, if not the greatest of all time.
It's a tough one, because it's one of those questions that you find it hard to answer. And on any given day, I could probably give you a different answer of my top five. And yep. those that you've mentioned would be in the conversation as well as probably Kurt Angle. It's it's a tough one, because it sometimes you've got a bit of recency biases, and you may have just watched something, and it's affected you kind of lifted him up a couple of points. But no, I totally. Kenny Omega, another one that the last 5 years introduced me to, and my God, that guy is on a different level. But then you've got like Will Ospreay now as well, who's doing Kenny Omega style things, and he's only like 30. You know, it's
For me, honestly, if Hangman Adam Page continues at what he's doing, he's on track for me to be a greatest of his generation contender. Like.
See, I'm waving my hat.
Like, there's not the amount of output, but the level of output, like in the Omega sense, like the level of output is insane, particularly when look at the broader stories and the way that he is able to communicate a character in wrestling. It is borderline unmatched. And, you know, I'm a fan of Jon Moxley, who I think's up there as well in terms of like the way he shows his character and in the way that he wrestles.
100%. I mean, you've basically just give a great example of what I'd said a few minutes earlier. That on any different day, you throw a few more names in, a name you randomly forgot for some reason, and then you suddenly hate yourself for possibly forgetting this person. I mean, Hangman Adam Page is one of the best at character work in the world. His character work is phenomenal. And is
doing his things. I should say, to clarify that, doing things as a character and exploring themes that have not been explored as in depth on a broad scale that in wrestling ever. Well, phenomenal.
We can go back to a little bit of a bubbly promo, but it was immediately followed by Hangman looking absolutely distraught, having lost his chance. And I've said this a long time, and I'll continue with this. He's the main character in AEW, and he has been from day one. Everything has been revolving around Hangman for me, and just that one blip when Tony Khan got a little bit too happy about a new arrival to change things, but he should never have lost the title, and everything should still revolve around Hangman. If I talk about that, I'll go into fancy booking and what I want Hangman to do, so we better not. But Hangman is phenomenal. That's the bottom line.
I spoke about that other person last week with Benno, so I'll let the as Hangman said in one of his promos, the dark cloud is now gone. We could talk about other things, but let's get into this sort of the build to this match, or sort of the, you know, Chris Jericho in AEW, where we're easing our way into it, half an hour in or so. But one of the reasons that I really thought this match would be interesting to talk about is because it would give us a chance to talk about Chris Jericho in AEW. So far since running this podcast, since returning, I haven't talked about Chris Jericho, and running it, I've really only covered the first, say, 12 months or so. Well, I guess if you include all of 2019, about the first 2 years or so of his time in AEW. So, you know, cover the very first episode was him against Cody. I've done the title match with Mox, talked about Stadium Stampede in great detail, and talked about Blood and Guts early on as well, which, you know, that was coming in a period, you know, from 2019 to 2021, where early 2021, where he was largely loved by the AEW fan base, and he was, you know, operating at a very high level. But I feel like in that 2021, that was not the case. And heading into 2022, there was a lot more mixed feelings around Jericho. You know, as you said, you kind of got pulled into AEW by Jericho. So I'm imagining you're pretty high on his work early on. What were your feelings towards him sort of heading into 2022, the year this match happened?
The same as most people, really, in the fact that in that his promos were still pretty decent. You know, I actually enjoyed the gimmick. I enjoyed the JES coming around. I don't know the best way to put this, but he was a bit out of shape. He'd let himself go a little bit. You know, he'd focus maybe too much on his outside interests in terms of his band and, you know, traveling and that kind of stuff and drinking, which he was doing on stream during the pandemic. You know, he was on stream. Not on stream. What was he streaming? He was actually. He was doing live shows on
streams.
Plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was just drinking, and it, like while he's just chatting away, and it's like,
weren't we all?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, exactly. You know, the man's 50 odd. You know, you gotta give him a break. Yeah. But yeah, and you could tell he was just a bit slower, you know, at everything, and he looked like he was slower without, you know, before you actually seen him in the ring. And it was getting to that point where people were starting to get a bit, not a bit bored, but a bit like, come on, man, he needs to do something. He needs to sort something out. He's being carried by a lot of people in some matches, and just kind of meandering through a lot of them as well, and was relying too much on the promo and too much on the gimmick rather than his actual in-ring ability. There was a couple of very sloppy line salts, if I remember rightly, which got the internet. You know, kick the internet off on one of the usual pylons. And I think he remembered that because there was one point when he trimmed down a bit and he came back and he did a line salt and looked directly into the camera, and it was a great shot. Perfect line salt, looking directly in the camera with a smirk on his face. And it was like, yeah, okay, he's back now.
For me, like through 2021, as I said, the start of it was great. I thought the Trials of Jericho was going to be the end for him. And I thought it was going to be a fitting one because, as you said, you know, you could see, particularly in his singles matches, the wheels were starting to fall off a bit. Like the singles matches with MJF, where, you know, they built this feud up to be such a big thing. It had been built for over a year, and they weren't hitting. He had multiple singles matches with MJF. You know, singles matches with other guys. He had one with Juventud Guerrero as part of that. Thing, which was not good. You know, the best match in that was the match with Nick Gage, because they got to do, you know, he got to do the plunder stuff and the, you know, that memorable pizza spot where he had the pizza cutter. He got cut up by a pizza cutter and then
that
they snapped to it on the nose ad, which was just, you could not have planned that better. You could not have written that in a Hollywood thing. But yeah, like, I thought it was going to be the end for him because you could see that the wheels were starting to come off, and, you know, it seemed like, you know, I shouldn't laugh, but the wheels were kind of coming off for Jericho as well, because he had a health scare at the end of 2021. Yeah. And also at that time, I should add, he'd started doing commentary a lot, and I thought he was doing quite well. Some people hated it, but I thought it was quite good. And I was like, okay, well, this is what he's going to be going into. And you could see also the promotion moving on from him in 2021 as well. Like Punk showed up, Danielson shows up, Cole shows up. It's like, okay, well, we've got the stars now. Jericho had to be in the spotlight because he was a star, but we've got new stars now. They've sort of coming in. Jericho's going to take a back seat. Maybe he's going to be a commentator, probably have influential role backstage, but you know, and MJF's going to get a bump from retiring him, but wasn't to be that way. But he came back at the start of 2022, having lost a lot of weight, had a, you know, started the Jericho Appreciation Society. They had started that rivalry with the Blackpool Combat Club. He had the Anarchy in the Arena match, the Blood and Guts match, which were both, you know, critically really loved. And, you know, then he had a big rivalry with Eddie Kingston, which, you know, I didn't like the way the final match ended. And that's sort of another point where people started to turn on Jericho again. Oh, he's beaten Eddie Kingston. He's, you know, he's squashing down this up and comer. Eddie Kingston. No, but at the same time, like when he beat Eddie Kingston in that barbed wire match, everyone, there was a lot of consternation on Twitter about it. And then he had, you know, another, you know, people flipped on it again because he had Moxley brought back Lionheart, said to beat him he'd need to bring back Lionheart, and they had a, you know, a really great match for the AEW title. So like 2022, you know, for me at least, you know, 2021 I was thinking Jericho had lost it and was on his way out. 2022 comes and it's like, hey, as they say on Social Suplex, never count out Chris Jericho.
100%. I fully subscribe to that because he arguably went on to have one of his best 18 month runs of his career at that point. Some fantastic matches, some of his best matches, some of my favorite matches that he's ever had in that run as well. So it is. It's a case of you can't. That's why even now you can't count the guy out at all.
Mm. And I think for me at least, looking back on this, seeing the Lionheart stuff and how that played into it, I think that was like a key that Jericho got, and Moxley kind of handed it to him. Moxley cut that promo saying, you know, to come up against me, you can't bring this sports entertainment bullshit that you've been doing. You've got to bring the Lionheart. And it was just like one of those keys that Jericho gets where he like tweaks his character. So you mentioned how the reinvention, and the way I put it is that he's very good at like tweaking his character for the majority of his career, except for the 2008-2009 heel turn excluded. I feel like he's largely played the same character, kind of this like egomaniacal rock star kind of guy, very self-inflated ego. But the thing that he does and that he just gets as well as anyone in wrestling has ever got is that you just need to constantly be tweaking it, constantly coming up with new catchphrases, new ways of presenting himself. And this gave him, it was like, okay, I'm going to come out in different gear. I'm going to come out to a different theme song. And you see what he's done now in 2024. He's done this kind of thing again. And I think John Moxley giving him that Lionheart and him saying, okay, this is hit, coming out to different theme songs in different gear, I'm just going to store that away and bring it up again at another point. And, you know, the tweaks continue to this day.
Well, he did that originally, as if you remember, with his first kind of character change in WWE when he went to Trunks, and he'd never wore Trunks before, but it was the whole, if I'm going to come back, I don't just want to come back as, oh, look, it's Chris Jericho with a little, you know, with a haircut. He said, I need to change a bit more. So the Trunks were a big change. And I noticed that that's what he's done recently as well. He's gone to the Trunks, which does give a completely different look. Even though we know it's the same guy, it does look different on the face of it. And it was the same with this. And with this match, one thing that plays into this match that again, adds to that Lionheart character change was he was clean shaven. And it took a fair few years off him as well, you know. So, so it's not just a small change, you know. It's something where we see the two side by side, there is a difference. It's not just Chris Jericho with a different colored, you know, pair of colored tights on or something, you know. So he tries that thing. And what you say about him changing his catchphrases up and stuff, that's actually bang on, because he spoke about that himself in the way that he doesn't like to go back to old things. And usually he's very good at knowing when the time is to change these things. But I think that's where he was struggling in 2001.
Yep.
Because do you remember GFY? Oh my God, that was terrible.
He
speaks about that when he was talking about his health scare he had, and he said like he looked at what he'd been doing, and he was like, oh my, how have I not realized how bad this is? He says usually he would realize and change it up a little bit quicker, because that's what he's usually very good at. If something isn't hitting, he's usually very good at switching it up or changing it or moving on from it at the right time. But he stuck with GFY for a while, and oh man, it was awful.
I have to point out as well, so it was my friend Miz Fan, who's been on this podcast a number of times, that originally pointed that out to me with Jericho. So I've got to credit that to him, that he was the one that said, hey, just let's pump the brakes on the reinvention, because it's often the same character broadly, maybe a heel or face dynamic of it. As I said, the 2008 stuff excluded, where he, you know, started wearing a suit and talking really slowly, which every heel then copied for 10 years. That excluded, he's largely played the same character, but with very much very tweaks. And the reason I said that, you said David Bowie earlier, which is a great comparison, because like David Bowie is another guy who every album had a new visual style, and he would have a bit of a different flair to the music. But at the same time, he's always playing rock and roll music, right? Like you hear a David Bowie song, you hear Spaceman, you hear Rebel Rebel, you hear Heroes, and it's always a David Bowie song, but there's very different visuals, and you know, the music is slightly different, but it's still a David Bowie song. I liked that comparison.
To be fair though, I think just changing it up essentially is still, you know, quite a bit of reinvention really in wrestling, because
yes. Yeah.
Aside from that, the only other reinvention you would get is when Vince would take a character, or like WWE do now, where they'll take someone and give them a completely different name,
yeah,
and put them in Viking gear or something, you know, and he was obviously never going to do that. So the next best thing is just changing your character up a bit. But yeah. I get that. But no, he's very good at doing that. And he always has been, really. It's been one of the biggest parts of his character that I've actually enjoyed, is the fact that he does change things up and he doesn't like to go back to old things. As much as people would have loved him to go back to Y2J, he hates that, because he says that was then and not Y2J anymore. You know, it's funny, because in this match at the start, the chants are Y2J, Y2J. And I was watching him thinking, he's probably hating this, because he does whinge about it a lot whenever people do.
Yeah. So Danielson and Jericho, they, of course, had a match as part of the overall rivalry between the BCC and the JAS. It was it All Out. That's not the match we're covering today, but it was, you know, part of the broader build up and part of the rivalry with Danielson and Garcia that was going on, which had some excellent matches in, I'll tell you that. Definitely going to cover those at some point. But what were your thoughts on the Danielson-Jericho match from All Out 2022?
It was okay. It was a bit disappointing, but that's just because I expected more from the two of them, and especially that Jericho was on on part of a good run at that point as well. It was okay. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great, but you knew that both had more. Both could give more in any other day. So I was glad that we got to see them have another match pretty soon afterwards. But yeah, the pay-per-view match wasn't great. It was just okay. You know, I don't do star ratings like Dave Meltzer, but what I would say is my ratings in terms of how many beers I would need to enjoy that match, probably two beers, and I'd still enjoy the match. You know, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like I needed like nine beers or something, you know, before I'd start to think it was all right.
I think for me with that match, if I was to critique, it was pretty slow. And slow is not always bad. Like I talked a couple of weeks ago about Moxley and Danielson, which was another slow match. But this, the Jericho and Danielson match, it didn't. And then, you know, these two matches that happened in the same year, it didn't have like an extra gear that it went to. And it also didn't have anything in it that was like, this is what makes this match unique, which I think the match we're going to talk about does have.
100%,
yeah. Things, yeah. And it didn't have, like, what's the character spot that's going to happen that is going to make this match unique? And, you know, Jericho, it's funny, afterwards, Jericho went into the press conference and he acted like it was a great, like he'd just, you know, created some magic out there. He's talking about how he just loved working with Danielson, how, you know, they were two of the only old school guys who could call in the ring just completely from scratch. But I think, you know, them probably not talking about and thinking about this match enough early beforehand led to that. You know, it's not a bad match by any stretch of the imagination. It's a good match. It's serviceable, but like not having, for instance, as we said, like something in it that's going to be like, okay, this is the moment that we remember this match for. This is like the strong ending that it has, or you know, these are the beats that our characters are going to go through. They just kind of went in there and they're like, we're going to listen to the crowd and be Ric Flair and Harley Race. Just call it in the ring like we're back in the territory days.
I think Jericho probably came out into the press conference and he probably said Chris Jericho and Brian Danielson had a great match there, because he constantly refers to himself in the third person. But for some other wrestlers, it would have been a good match, like, you know, a more well-received match. But when you think it's Brian Danielson and Chris Jericho, and a Chris Jericho who's actually on a bit of a resurgence, it was disappointing in that aspect.
Indeed. As I said, these guys had a match at All Out, and it was probably going to be the end of all things, to be honest. It was probably not going to be, they probably weren't originally planned to have another match afterwards. But of course, at All Out, there was a certain person caused a situation backstage, a little bit of a fracas. And then all of a sudden we had to find a new champion because the old champion had been suspended. So they announced the AEW Grand Slam Tournament of Champions. And look, to people listening, if you want to listen to me talk about CM Punk, then just go to the episode before this, CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. Talked about it extensively. I just don't want to cover it today, to be honest. If you want to do some stuff, Andy, you can. I'm not going to, though. Match obviously came as part of the Grand Slam Tournament of Champions that came about in the wake of Brawl Out. It was announced the first Dynamite afterwards, and Brian Danielson beat Hangman Adam Page that night in the first round. Chris Jericho got a bye, but it set up Brian Danielson and Chris Jericho in the semifinal to go against, on the other side of the bracket, Sammy G beat Darby Allin in the first round, and then John Moxley got a bye on that side. And then earlier in the night for this match, John Moxley beat Sammy Guevara to move on to the grand final with Danielson and Jericho to face off and to go up against John Moxley. What did you think of the tournament in general, Andy? And, you know, them using it, I guess, as a stopgap in the wake of everything that happened at All Out.
I thought it had to be done. Something had to be done, because it was a bit of a mess. You know, you basically have no
a bit
champion.
Of a mess. They're still recovering from it.
You say you don't want to talk about CM Punk. If I talk about CM Punk, you will literally just get me using some of the worst language possible for about 5 minutes and talking about shit tattoos. But anyway, he's the only man who is more paranoid than Macho Man Randy Savage. It takes some doing. But no, the tournament was needed. I thought it was great. It was a case of the locker room leaders, you know, the more experienced guys all standing up and saying, look, let's just fucking get this shit back on track. And I seem to remember a lot of stuff coming out at the time about kind of locker room meetings that they'd all had, and they were like, you know, look, let's all get on board, all on the same page, let's push together and get this back on track. And I felt like this tournament did that. It did that. It solidified things for a short while at least. And it was great. We got some fantastic matches out of it as well.
As you said, when we were just kind of chatting beforehand, this is not the first time that the BCC lads or Chris Jericho have had to step in a situation like this, is it?
No, they seem to be the go-tos. I mean, like I mentioned to you earlier, that they're doing that now, like with this current angle with the Elite, where they shit the bed in where it was going, and they took the foot off the gas. And now John Moxley and the Death Riders, which is essentially the BCC, have now come in and taken over and done what the Elite should have been doing in this angle. And, you know, this happened back then, when, if you remember, when the Elite came back after the suspension. Again, the same thing. Brian Danielson took over the CM Punk character, calling them amateurs, saying they're a bunch of kids. You know, he's working with children. And he essentially done what we would have got if CM Punk was willing to play ball and if the Elite were going to trust him to give this a go. And it seems like the go-to every time is the is the, you know, the Blackpool Combat Club, or just, you know, the experienced guys. But it's a case of going back to these guys to just fix things and steady the ship a little bit, and maybe fix an angle that's gone wrong or been sabotaged along the way. And I think you mentioned as well, for instance, the Bryan Danielson match with Ricky Starks.
Yep.
Which is a fantastic match. Ricky Starks, best match he's ever had.
Yep.
Yeah, which again was Bryan Danielson kind of picking up the pieces of, you know, the mess that was left from somebody else.
Yep.
Which is great, because I'm not sure we would have got a match as good as that if it hadn't happened. But still, the fact that they're the fixers, if you like, for these issues quite a lot.
Yeah, these guys, it's obvious that these guys have got a lot of trust backstage with Tony Khan, both Jericho and Danielson. Like, at different points, it seemed like they're, you know, the right-hand man to Tony Khan almost. And there was like kind of meetings saying, let's get this shit back on track. That was that's almost kind of what John Moxley said in the promo in 2022. Yeah. And it's the message in, you know, modern day BCC as well. Like, let's get this thing back on track. They're operating as heels, of course, but been a lot of revisions at different points where different parts of the AEW have been like, let's shape this up and let's fix things up. But I think this tournament here was like, it was the best they could have done in a bad situation. It's like immediately it's like, okay, we're going to have matches between stars. We're going to have wins and losses. We're going to immediately give this belt some prestige after, you know, the champion's been suspended. And after there was also, you know, there was weirdness. I disagree with it, but, you know, some people felt like the championship had been devalued even in the lead up to All Out with them, you know, having an interim champion. I disagree. I thought that was a brilliant angle, but, the perception is reality sometimes, and there was a lot of people who perceived that was the situation. But immediately, you know, this bad situation happens and they have stars. All Who Care, the reason for the inclusion of all of the different people was, of course, Jericho, the original AEW champion, John Moxley, former champion, Hangman Page, former champion, and Sammy G and Darby Allin are both multiple-time TNT champions. So it's like immediately there's, you know, big-name stars who've got wins, big-time wins and spots under their belt, and they're all going at it hammer and tongs to win this prize possession, which is the AEW championship, making the best of a bad situation. And the AEW championship as well, prominently displayed at ringside prior to each of these matches, which I think is a really great part of them setting the scene for these matches, and a nice thing to have at ringside while they're going on.
Oh, I totally agree. That was a great touch. It did feel important. It did. It felt like there was it's funny because you say wins and losses. It's strange, isn't it, that wins and losses enhance the feeling of something. If only they'd go back to that. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, recently, a promo recently with Hangman Adam Page, you know, as I said, he's our goat, our generational goat. He recently said there's only wins and losses and the consequences of them, which, I don't know. For me, that would be like, they should put that on the booking board in whatever office, whatever whiteboard is in Tony Khan's office. They should put that quote on there. But look, is there anything else you'd like to say about the sort of the build up or Jericho and Danielson before we get into the match itself, Andy?
To be fair, I think you covered most of what I would have said, but like for me personally, as a Jericho fan from the 90s, I got excited. I got really excited because I thought, here we go, there's a chance, there's a chance, and I thought we'd get another run of the old Le Champion. I was extremely excited, and never got it, but don't care. I got some great matches out of it, and it led on to something else, which I was really, really enjoying for the following few months. But the build up was great. It was it wasn't great. It was, the build up was the best that they could have done in that situation, as you said yourself. And yeah, I don't really think there's much more they could have done with it, to be honest, apart from maybe have Jericho win. but that wasn't to be.
I was, I'll be honest, of course, regular listeners will know, guess who I was pro for? I was cheering John Moxley for some reason. Best wrestler in the world in 2022. I was cheering for him to win. But you know what? Jericho and MJF, because MJF was, of course, playing a prominent part of what was going on as well, obviously not in this match itself, but he had that that looming title shot. But, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but Jericho and MJF did have history, and it would have been kind of fitting as well for MJF to beat Chris Jericho, as much as it was, you know, I was cheering for John Moxley. It could have been fitting for him to go up against Jericho. So, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but that's a good shout there.
I think that was just me as a you know, the inner child Jericho fan coming out. Like, I think John Moxley was the right choice.
Yeah. Well, it was also the inner child of John Moxley fan inside me. So let's get into the match though, Andy. But before we do get into the match, I'd like to quickly plug the amazing new Social Suplex merch line that we've released on Chopped Tees. If you haven't seen it yet, I'd love for you to visit Chopped Tees and go into the Social Suplex section. Our team's merch has been uniquely designed in conjunction with the site to reflect the colorful characters of each show on the network. They've got O&R shirts and hats designed as if they're the Dream Team, Keep It Strong style zip up hoodies. We've got Tunnel Talk Snuggies, Imp's Adventures teacup, and my personal favorite, my specially designed match guide shirts and hoodies. We created it to not just stand out in a sea of bland wrestling designs, but to commemorate AEW's fifth anniversary and the match guide list we released earlier this year. It's got the show's logo on the front, tributing the EVPs, and then lists out the top 50 AEW matches in the style of a band world tour t-shirt on the back. I think what stood out to me most when I got my first shirt is the quality of the garment. We've all had wrestling shirts that have stretched or faded after we've only worn them a few times, but these shirts are made from high quality materials, so they don't just look great, but they last as well. Chopped Tees also ship globally at no extra cost. They have no tax at checkout, and your first order on the site is eligible for 10% off. At the Social Suplex, we're incredibly proud of this collaboration. So don't wait. Head straight to chopped-tees.com/social-suplex and get yourself some merch. It will not just look great, but will also help the network. That is chopped-tees.com/social-suplex. Thank you to Chopped Tees for this collaboration.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. Everybody needs some variety in life. That's what I love about Chumba Casino. They know how to keep things fresh and exciting. All their games are free to play. Like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire. You can claim free daily login bonuses too. And they release new games every week. So spice things up with ChumbaCasino.com now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
So as we always do on the AEW Match Guide, let's give this match its flowers. Dave Meltzer originally rated this 4.5 stars. Cage Match currently has it rated at 8.3. And when we did the definitive match guide earlier this year, the top 50 matches from AEW's first 5 years, sadly, this match received one single vote. It came in equal 96, as low as it could go with getting any votes. So, look, a match that was well appreciated at the time, I'd say, but hasn't necessarily been remembered as well as some of the other matches that these guys have had. We'll talk a little bit more at the end about why that might be. But let's look at it. As I said, it happened at Dynamite on the September the 14th, 2022. So it's pretty standard entrances for both men. The crowd at this point still loves singing Judas back in 22. And Chris Jericho loves hearing Judas as much as he ever loved hearing the crowd sing Judas. And Danielson is as popular as ever as well, despite coming out from the heel side of the entrance tunnels. As we mentioned before, the AEW Championship is set up at ringside and both men take a good hard look at it as they get to the ring. And the commentators make a specific comment about how Danielson has never beaten Chris Jericho. It's a pretty good setup, I think. Andy?
Yeah, oh, it is great. And Regal on commentary as well. Fantastic.
Yes, indeed.
Because he kept calling back to a lot of old Jericho stuff from the old days. Which I thought was a great touch, really, especially with him being, you know, coming out as the Lionheart Chris Jericho again.
And it is interesting that they mentioned that Danielson has never met Jericho, beat Jericho, I should say, because I think for myself and a lot of people, a Danielson versus Chris Jericho match was the very first time we saw Bryan Danielson on NXT back when it was a weird game show. So that was the first impression I ever had of Bryan Danielson. It was a really good one. But of course, he lost to Chris Jericho in that. So, yeah, it's good that they kind of set the scene, particularly, you know, it's a tournament setting. So Danielson has to overcome what he hasn't been able to overcome before. And it reminded me of the match that I covered a couple of weeks ago with Danielson against Mox and also Joe versus Punk, where at the time there was a build-up of one side had never beaten the other one. You know, Moxley had never beaten Danielson up until Revolution 2022, and Punk had famously never beaten Joe in a singles match up until their original match on Collision. So I like that they made a big thing of that. And as I said, like, it was, we sort of mentioned in the build-up that Jericho lost a bit of weight, and it was almost jarring when I went into kind of look at this and seeing him, like, he looked so chiseled, and you mentioned the lack of a beard, like, looks very, very sharp jaw, on him Jericho has in this match, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a big difference, and he did look really trim in this match. It had a real big match feel to it, didn't it, when they came out, the two of them? I noticed that when I was rewatching it, I don't know if it was the crowd or what, but and also the black ropes. I miss the black ropes, but everything just seemed to contribute to this real big match feel. You know, the crowd were really, really into it just at the entrances, and we had a great face-off initially. That you know, I love that when you get that kind of 10-second, you know, 10-second, both corners just kind of looking at each other, a little smirk, getting ready, and the crowd are getting really hyped up. It was a great build up to it, and it just had, like I say, had a real big match feel for what, you know, for what was essentially a thrown together let's fix things match. You know, it was I think it far exceeded its expectations, really, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, it's a Dynamite main event, which happens literally every week. So
yeah.
But it, you're right. I think, like, all the setting, you know, the way the commentators build it up, I think it did make for a big match feel to was the Dynamite main event. They start out, as you said, they do stare each other down a bit, but Danielson's very aggressive early on, lots of chops, kicks, running drop kick before Jericho can really do anything. I kind of like it as a response to, like, the very technical and much slower affair in their first match in AEW that Jericho won, of course. I love, like, when a second match happens in a sequence and the wrestlers actively work off what happened in the first match. And I think Danielson coming out so aggressive is a response to them going a little bit slower in the last match and it not working out for Danielson. So he comes out immediately with aggressive strikes.
Oh, it was great. It was great, wasn't it? And you had the crowd, the dueling Y2J yes chants from the crowd at the time. It was quite even for the first few minutes.
Yeah.
The crowd were invested in both. And Bryan Danielson with the with just insane chops. Insane chop, kick, chop, kick, chop, kick, to the point where Jericho's chest was an absolute mess within a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Dead raw, both of them.
Jericho, Dave's pretty much bleeding from the side of his pec at one point, and it seems to be a Jericho thing. Maybe it's the blood thinners, but it was great. It just adds to everything, you know, that visual of chops actually doing serious damage, because, you know, chops get thrown around by you know, non wrestling fans or a lot of wrestling fans as just being a bit of a waste of time, but some of these chops are fantastic.
I agree. Yeah. And like Danielson, everyone knows that he can chop and leans into Jericho.
Yes.
Underrated. Like he can lean into a chop just as much as anyone.
I did. Well, the recent match with Ishii. Suzuki.
Yep.
That was another example of where they chopped each other for just, you know, 10 minutes straight. Great.
Yeah. Well, but later in this year, Jericho would have that match with Ishii. Where he would blade his chest.
Yeah, he's done that a few times. Yeah, it's a great, great effect. Like I say, maybe it's the blood thinners help with that, but who knows? But no, it's great that like I say, for the first 5 minutes of the match, it was just chop, kick, chop, kick. Jericho taking most of the beating, but still getting a couple of chops in. The crowd were wooing then, as well as giving it yes chance, and Y2J, and Yeah, they were just giving each other a beating at this point, and Bryan Danielson was fully on top of Jericho.
Mm. And as I said, I love that as a response to how the first match went. Danielson's like, Jericho, of course, had a chance to cheat in the second one. You know, the slower pace, the grapple heavy of the first one. And the response is, okay, I'm going to – it didn't work for me the first time going slow and trading hold for hold. I'm gonna beat the shit out of you now this time, which is great. You mentioned William Regal is on commentary. What did you think generally of William Regal – being involved in the BCC matches on commentary and him in this match?
It was excellent because we had his back and forth with Excalibur, which everybody loved, but he was able to reference so many specific Jericho things and Bryan Danielson things from times he's worked with them in the past over the years.
Yep.
And going back to old Jericho Lionheart stuff. And he was referencing some of the Hart family stuff. You know, the man like knows his shit, doesn't he? So It was an excellent addition to this match, and I think it really, for me personally, it definitely enhanced, you know, the whole spectacle of the thing, you know, for me as a viewer, yeah, and as a fan, it was brilliant.
Yeah, I loved particularly just in the when John Moxley was interim champ, I loved how William Regal would just bristle. And whenever people called Moxley the interim champ, because it was very subtly done, that showing how the BCC did not agree with Moxley being the interim champ, and Moxley said it outright in a number of promos. But I picked it up that every time Excalibur or Schiavone would mention that it's the interim champ, William Regal would correct them. As just being like, no, he's the champion. He's the real champion. That's not how I see it. Like, that's not how I see things. And in this match, you're right. Like, I remember him talking about like the rabbit punches that Chris Jericho does.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like little technical flourishes that I think sometimes you can, like, wrestling commentators can go overboard trying to sound smart. But for William Regal, it sounds so natural, and he manages to talk about the moves in how they inform the character that is doing them in a really natural way, which I loved.
100%. And like as Jericho started to take control with more of a heel, basically you use more of his heel side, his heel character, his heel moveset. William Regal was essentially, he was explaining this to the audience, to the viewer, explaining that that's what he would have done, you know, and this is why Jericho is doing it, you know, because he's got to take every advantage he can get, and this is exactly what he would have done. It's what every, you know, what these guys need to do against someone like Bryan Danielson. And he was also on the flip side to talk about how Bryan Danielson should be doing something slightly different when Jericho was getting on top. So it was great. It's William Regal, isn't it? You know, it's not really much you can say. If anyone ever listened to that short period he had when he was doing his podcasts, he's the kind of guy I could listen to all day. Regardless of what happened with AEW, his wrestling knowledge, especially of the British wrestling scene in the, you know, 80s, 70s, is second to none.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. If this match is remembered for one thing, it is remembered for how it uses the presence of the AEW Championship at ringside to motivate Bryan Danielson. So it's a spot that happens sort of about two-thirds of the way through the match. It's not a very long match, and as I said, it is very kick-heavy. They sort of spill to the outside at one point, get back in, very chop kick-heavy. But there's a particular moment that I think this match is most remembered for, and that people do reference a bit online, is Danielson is doing the elbows to the head, which Jericho then reverses. Jericho is elbowing Bryan Danielson in the head with the hammer and anvil elbows. But Bryan Danielson is staring at the title, and he locks eyes with the title, he starts to no-sell those elbows. He slowly gets to his feet as Jericho tries to keep elbowing him, looking at the title, and then he turns around and just lays out a massive chop on his own. And, you know, it kind of shows so much about what Danielson's going through in this match.
He's so good at that, isn't he? That actually reminds me of the Swerve match recently at All In. Same kind of thing.
100%. I had the same thing in my notes. Yep.
Starts no selling as he's looking at his daughter and his family. And just gets back up and cracks. Oh, man. Yeah, it is. You get chills just thinking about that moment. It's great. But I think we skipped the moments, actually. I think maybe I'm a bit mixed up with my timing. But there's a great moment when Jericho was on top and he flexed. And he does look trim. He looks in great shape.
Yep.
And he does a flex, arms up, and he looks down. Brian Danielson just starts doing push-ups. And it was just
yes.
great. Yep. And he's got that shock on his face, that look of, what? Like, he's beat the shit out of him. He's doing push-ups.
Yeah, I love Brian Danielson. Absolutely. Brian Danielson, he's got that, like, cocky edge to him.
Yeah.
And in his character in AEW.
He also is one of the best sellers I think I've ever seen.
Mm.
And to the point where he's had us all convinced he's actually injured at times. I mean, I don't know if you ever remember that Rampage taping when he got his leg trapped in the ramp and the entire world was convinced that he was having his leg amputated because it was that bad. And it turned out there was nothing. He was just winding
us
up.
He was faking the whole thing.
he's a sick bastard. Like, that's why I don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. That's why I wouldn't be surprised if he returned next week. I don't believe anything he says, but anyway, that's another story. Yeah. But he's one of the best sellers I've ever seen. And the same with this. I actually thought he'd injured his ankle in this match when he went over the ropes.
Yeah.
And he landed. And great bit of commentary, by the way, from Excalibur talking about his boots. He's not wearing traditional wrestling boots, so he hasn't got the support on his ankle that he would have needed. He looked like he had actually rolled it. So at one point, I was thinking, is he done here? Like, you know, are they gonna just finish this? Am I actually gonna get my dream of a Jericho win? And but no, he played it off obviously, and then that opened the door for Jericho to then go full heel and focus on the ankle.
Yeah.
Sorry if I've jumped ahead there, by the way, but just I wanted to mention about his selling with that ankle point.
No, you're right. I'd mentioned the little him looking at the championship, and that's pretty much what happened straight after. I just to bring it back to the championship thing, I think, as I said, like I think the biggest one of the biggest things this match has over the previous match is that moment where that people remember is it like Danielson injecting that sense of desperation and desire, and we talked about like elevating the AEW championship. You know, this is Danielson using it to motivate himself, which gives that championship worth as well, because this is what's motivating Bryan Danielson to come back in the match. But then, of course, as you said, he gets back into things and he takes control again. He hits his, you know, he's even like on the verge of victory. He gets the cattle mutilation locked in, but then he gets suplexed to the outside, and that's when he injures the ankle. And it reminded me this actually, how Chris Jericho then just like viciously turns and goes after it. It reminded me of how Jericho acts in the match against Cody at Full Gear in 2019, when Cody goes over the ropes and like knocks himself stupid and starts bleeding. Jericho just goes straight after it. Like that carny trained in the territories almost brain just switches on and he goes, there's an injury. I'm the heel.
Yeah.
I'm targeting that injury. He just viciously goes after it. And like in, you know, we talked about the desperation that Danielson showed in his selling and the way he no-sell, then turned that into no-selling, looking at the title. Jericho is just as desperate in the way he just so viciously targets the ankle.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? Yeah. It's like kind of like he's doing anything to try and like I've got my chance now. I need to try everything. So he's just absolutely focusing on that ankle, and it follows with the submissions he tries to try and get this over the line. He's he's really lasered in on this injury, which you know he's a heel, he should be. You know that's exactly what we want to see. It was great. It was just and William Regal as well was talking about it, saying it again. That's exactly what he would have done.
Mm.
So it's exactly what he should be doing.
Yep.
It's funny because Bryan Danielson was. It was hard to see who was the heel and who was the face in this. Coming in, they were both really cheered. I think Bryan Danielson was supposed to be the heel at this time, wasn't he? From memory, I think he came out of the heel tunnel. You said, didn't you?
I think he wanted to be a heel a lot in AEW, but the crowd.
Bryan Danielson
too
for God's
much.
Sake.
Bryan Danielson in AEW is hard to get booed.
But regardless
he controlled
of whether he
the match like he was a heel until, you know, his ankle got tweaked, and then he was the face in peril.
Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make, is the fact that, like, we get to that point when Jericho's fully focusing in, and from that point on, Bryan Danielson's a face anyway, because he's the you know, the guy who's just kind of grasping for anything to you know, and he's on the back foot, the heel's taking advantage of him.
Jericho rips his boot off.
Yeah, you're almost waiting for a hulking up moment from him at that point, because that's the exact situation he's in.
Mm. And Jericho, like the ending comes quite quickly, I think. Like, Jericho's got him in the walls of Jericho, and then he, as I said, he's targeting that ankle. He switches to a single leg Boston Crab, which, I don't know, it's the single leg Boston Crab is when done well, it's an underrated submission. Like, the way that you can twist and turn someone with it compared to the double leg is pretty intense. Like, I always remember when Serena Deeb, like, bent Riho pretty much in half and basically touched Riho's back of the back of Riho's head with Riho's foot with a single leg Boston Crab. But this one's a pretty brutal looking one as well, and Jericho's got a bit more bulk to him than Serena Deeb, so it looks like he's really wrenching on it. But Danielson, being the canny operator he is, he's able to reverse it and rolls into the bell lock, and after fighting the lock, Jericho gets a tap out. Sorry, Jericho taps out. Danielson gets the win. What did you think of the ending?
Well, firstly, I wish Jericho would have got the tap out. I wish it was the other way around. But no, I thought it was great. The ending was what it should have been. It should have been a Bryan Danielson just getting that one moment to lock him in, and it's over. Because he was knackered, his leg was gone. There was no way the match could have gone on much longer. Like, in, you know, from a realism point of view, obviously they probably could have, but it was the best ending they could have done in that situation, I think. We also missed the fact that Jericho hit a perfect line shot.
He did, yes.
And then he went for the Judas effect, a move which I hate, and he missed, which then led to the sequence that you mentioned. But no, it was a great ending, and Jericho looked like he's reaching for the ropes. Bryan grabs the nostrils, pulls him back a little bit further, and it's done. He taps out, and we move on to a Moxley Danielson championship match. And the camera as well, the camera work was great as well, cutting to the back with Daniel Garcia. Because one thing that's really interesting about looking back is that Daniel Garcia is actually, when Bryan Danielson gets the win, Daniel Garcia watching the TV has kind of got a grin on his face, and he's nodding. Mm. He's like, yeah. And you know, that kind of played into the willy won't he at the time, in terms of Daniel Garcia joining the BCC and teaming up with Bryan Danielson. Because it wasn't long after he won the pure title, was it? And Bryan Danielson handed it to him, which gave Wheeler Utah a bit of a, you know, some bad vibes, which actually, funny enough, plays into what's going on now, possibly.
And then set up the Chris Jericho Danielson match as well at the same time, because Garcia, of course, was in Jericho's stable. I like, you mentioned how Danielson, like, works the submission. I love how Danielson works submissions, how he's always grabbing his nose or hooking the mouth and stuff. I love those little touches. It's so good. And I was just thinking as well, like, you know, we spoke earlier about, like, the greats of the generation, Okada, Omega, Danielson. I've seen Okada and Omega sell exhaustion incredibly well, and fire up incredibly well, but I've never seen them sell a limb the way that Danielson can do and does in this match.
I don't think I've seen anyone sell a limb as well as Danielson. Like,
he
does it to the point where that's a good shot, Bret Hart, but he does it to the point where he convinces us as fans and viewers that it's real and he's actually fucked. And like, I'm sure that's his actual aim in the match, is just to play with our heads, you know, have a good match. But the most important thing is to make people think I'm half dead.
Very true, very true. I love the sort of the ending of this is, and ultimately the reason Danielson's able to win is he pushes the pace and doesn't give Jericho the chance to cheat in this match like he got the chance to in their first match. It's kind of a, as I said, like, I love when I'm looking at a sequel match, I love to compare it to the first match and say, like, you know, if this is a real fight, like, what has have they gone into it thinking like this is the ways I'm going to change the outcome of the last match, or I'm going to tweak the outcome, or looking at different sequences that the other person did, how am I going to counter that? And one of the things that Danielson does is he pushes a faster pace in this match, and he doesn't let Jericho get the space or the chance to cheat, with the, you know, having the referees back turned and giving Jericho the chance to cheat. So I really like that as that. And it's a, you know, as we said, it's a pretty fast ending, but at the same time, sometimes a definitive ending that doesn't have a 1,000 kickouts and fake outs is good, particularly when it's like the semi-final of a tournament. You know, like, you want to save the best match of a tournament to be the final. And in this instance, I think they, you know, played their hand perfectly.
No, I totally agree with that. I don't think the match would have been as good if we'd had multiple kickouts toward the end, multiple near falls. I think it was better to finish it as it was. Bryan Danielson just getting that one moment he needed, locking in the bell lock, and we're done. Let's go home.
Yeah,
and it's funny because you talk about his the little things he does to enforce a submission, you know, that took me back just as I mentioned earlier to the recent Swerve match at All In, when he did the same thing. You know, he grabs Swerve's fingers and he's snapping away at his fingers to avoid him getting out of the submission. And as I said, it's exactly what he does in this one, where he grabs, you know, the grabs Jericho's nostrils, pulls his nose up, and then really really locks it in.
Mm. Let's move on from the match itself, and let's sort of start talking about the legacy of the match. As I said at the start, this was a match that was well rated at the time. Meltzer gave it 4.5. It's currently 8.3 on Cage Match. So, you know, a match that people really enjoyed, and it's fair to say people at the time rated pretty well. But when we did the definitive match guide earlier this year, as I said, it got one vote. It basically got a did not place in terms of people voting, putting it in their top 15.
Who voted for this? Think? Because I need names and addresses.
Yeah, like there's a list of people I can tell you who didn't vote for it. If you go on there, you can see.
Yeah.
You can see the list of people who voted, and one of those people, I didn't make the ballots public because I don't think that's fair. It's a silent ballot, but. All but one person voted for it, and that person voted for it 15th. So even they didn't exactly stick it high on their ballot sheet. But why do you think that is? Like, obviously, you know, we're talking top 15 match. People got to pick 15 matches from the first 5 years. That is pretty rare air, but it didn't attract much at all in terms of voting.
Well, firstly, the people who didn't vote for it, I'm sorry, I have to say this, you've made the list. Now,
I'm one of them. I'll tell you that. I'm one of the people who didn't vote for this.
Well, Sam, if I had a pen, I'd be snapping that pen now, and I'd be saying, you've just made the list. But no, there's a few factors, isn't there? There's basically 15 matches. So there probably is 15 matches better than it. So it's not really too much of a slant, really, on the match that people didn't choose it.
Mm.
But there's also the fact that, like, it's the meme-like hate that has been generated the last like year or so, has just brainwashed so many people. And like, I'm not saying people have fallen for a meme like hate thing, but there is a wave of, oh, Jericho, regardless of what happens now. And people forget just how good some of his matches have been because of that. It's a recency bias thing, isn't it? Really, people's most recent memories of Jericho are probably a lot less endearing than a couple of years ago. And then we have the other thing on top of the Nick Hartman stuff and everything else that has clearly helped shape people's views of Jericho since.
That kind of leads us into our next point. To answer my own question, I think purely and simply, like, the top 15 AEW matches is a very high bar, and Jericho and Danielson have both had matches that are rated much more highly generally. And so when people are putting together their top 15, I know for me, this is a match that I glanced over but immediately passed on because I just I can easily think of 15 matches that are more. I could probably think of 30 matches that are more. And it's not a slight on this match necessarily, but more just the quality of the output from both of these men in AEW in general.
100%. Yeah. It's like I say, that's why it's not really a huge bit, you know, slants on this match at all, because there is a lot. There is 15 matches better than this from AEW. This match is just for me personally, being a big Jericho fan for, you know, from since 1996 or whatever, just holds a little bit more. But for everyone else, it probably doesn't. You know, and like, you're probably right in saying there's probably 30 matches better. AEW's match list is insane. You know, what they've done in what they've done in 5 years is ridiculous. You could probably argue that this, if you were asking someone whether this match was in the top 15 of the last 5 years of another company, there'd probably be a chance it would be, to be honest. But you know, we won't go there.
And that moment of Danielson no selling the strikes and looking at the AW championship does the rounds on X, or maybe it'll do the rounds on Blue Sky every year. Who knows? Now we're all moving to Blue Sky. So,
fingers crossed.
Everyone
moves to Blue Sky.
Yeah. But look, to move along, I wanted to talk about Chris Jericho, because I thought what's happened with Chris Jericho since this match, you know, I think it's fair to say Jericho was operating on a pretty high level at this point. He went on to win the ROH title. Had quite a well-received run, including another match against Danielson. Probably not as well-received as this one, but still a good match. But had, you know, great matches with Ishii, another really great match with Claudio as part of all that. Still operating on quite a high level. And I believe that is when I should give full credit. It's full credit is to Rich Ladder from One Nation Radio on the never count out Chris Jericho meme, which still does the rounds every now and again. But I think it's fair to say he's not on the same level in ring at the moment, but definitely not on the same level with the fans. When do you think, like, this sort of the drop off started a little bit, and what do you think caused it, Andy?
Well, it's the Houseman stuff. That's when it started. Like that's you can clearly see pre Revolution weekend when
World's End, I think, wasn't it?
Was it World's End? Well, he was supposed to be in a match anyway, a tag match, I think it was, from memory. That stuff was all over the internet, and like all of a sudden the crowd reaction at the next match was, you know, you had people saying he should be pulled from the pay-per-view. Then the crowd reaction was terrible for the next match. And it's never picked up since. It's picked up a bit, but never got back to, you know, pre-Houseman, if you like. But that was the big one, really. I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's 54 now. So he's not going to be as good in ring as he used to be. I still think his promos are good, even if I'm not a fan of the overly children's TV presenter style of the Learning Tree these days. But it still seems over. He still gets a lot of waves in the crowd when he's hitting it. But the stain of the Houseman stuff will probably never go for a lot of people, regardless of whether there was anything there, which I guess we'll never know. But you know, that's a completely different discussion, is it? You know.
The time I noticed it was that it really started to ramp up was after the ROH title run. He had a program with Ricky Starks that was, I think, middling at best. And I think there was a lot of dialogue then of being like, Ricky Starks shouldn't be in a program with isn't benefiting from this program with Chris Jericho. And my thought at the time was that he was in that, because if you're in a program with Chris Jericho, you're on TV, but the matches 100%. Weren't hitting, the promos weren't necessarily hitting, and it just seemed to be like a bit of a mismatch. And then later on in the year as well, even before the Houseman stuff, you had the Golden Jets, Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega had some promo stuff with Ricky Starks and Big Bill that just went horrendously. And turns out, you know, at the time, Kenny Omega was suffering from diverticulitis and didn't even realize it. But at the same time, that promo went sideways very quickly. But even in 2023, like, as I said, you've got that Ricky Starks feud. Then there was the Adam Cole feud, which was, you know, people sort of gave the blame for some of the stuff that happened in that to Chris Jericho rather than to Adam Cole. And then he had a program with Will Ospreay, which went fantastically. And the match, particularly at All In, was, you know, for some people, match of the night at All In. So very up and down. But I think for me, when I noticed the loudness of the discussion around Jericho really starting to come to the fore was immediately after the ROH title run, when he had the program with Ricky Starks. And yeah, you know, the Housman stuff that happened, which was, you know, is all – it's crazy. It's all based on a single – the rumors that came out and a single love heart. There's literally no one knows what it's going – like what these rumors are about, what happened. Even the suggestions on at the time were not – it was not clear what was being alleged and – what was being supported by, you know, by Kylie Rae in these things, and you know, but that really sent things sent him off into a tailspin.
Yeah, and on the audience
reaction in particular off him.
Yeah, well, I think you're right in terms of the Ricky Starks stuff. I completely forgotten how bad that was. But like the Ring of Honor run was great, and then coming into the Golden Jets, no one wanted the Golden Jets, but we'll never know if it would have worked. I don't think it would have personally, but we'll never know if it would have because of what it was. And Jericho and the whole, you know, that whole angle suffered from what I think is one of Tony's biggest weaknesses, in that he doesn't know how to pivot when things don't go. You know, don't go as planned. You know, he likes to stick to the landing a lot of the time, so he'd rather wait. So when Kenny Omega was first injured, Jericho kind of stayed in that kind of holding pattern for the Golden Jets feud with the Callis family, and it was bad for not just Jericho but for Takeshita, for Hobbs. Like none of them were going anywhere because they were just treading water in this pattern until they could decide what they were going to do with him, and it killed the momentum of all of them. So it was particularly bad for Jericho at the time, but Takeshita suffered a lot as well. And then we went on there did we have the Adam Cole stuff? That was before, wasn't it? Yeah,
that Adam wasn't Cole great stuff was either. Before that was when
yeah,
Adam
that
Cole
was
returned.
Terrible as well.
And before Cole got stuck into it with MJF.
It was just a terrible match from memory. That it was what the worst match on the pay per view from memory.
But so, it came after a really good Falls Count Anywhere match with Roddy Strong.
Yeah.
To kind of continue the up and down nature of things for Chris Jericho.
But like I say, the meme like hate automatically. He's a very divisive figure, isn't he? With a lot of people on the internet, and that means that regardless of you know, who had the biggest impact in the match not being great, it's Jericho's fault anyway in a lot of people's minds. And you see that through a lot of things. It's, oh, that's Jericho's fault. You know, someone not getting – Ricky Starks not benefiting from the feud, that's Jericho's fault. Well, I'm sorry, but if you're in a program with Chris Jericho and you're in a program with Adam Copeland and you still don't get over –
and a program with CM Punk and Danielson.
Then maybe you should look at yourself rather than complaining, you know, about other people. And it's the same with any, you know, Adam Cole didn't really get over him, but he moved on to another feud and made it work. It's so easy to blame Jericho for a lot of these things, and a lot of these things may, you know, sometimes it may be that Jericho has kind of, you know, not really made it work himself, but a lot of the time it's not, you know,
I think what you get is a legitimate in-ring decline that happened in 2023. And also he didn't deliver in some instances when it comes to promos and things like that. And combined with, so you get genuine criticism for those moments, which is fair and good faith critique. But you also have that combined with I don't disagree that there are some people out there who just dislike everything Chris Jericho says and does. And sometimes even in good faith, like for whatever reason, it's completely turned off Chris Jericho. But there are parts of that tend to be very, very loud and constant. And when Chris Jericho has a bad moment, they're even louder. And that then combines with the genuine bad, like the genuine good faith criticism of what's happened, to just have a cacophony of negativity around Chris Jericho when things aren't going as well. And they are not, like, it's more often not going well than it used to not be not going well. What am I trying to say? He's declined slightly, so there are more chances for the people. There's a greater chance that he will have a poor showing now because he's over 50 and he has been very exposed in AEW, and he is also now working with people who are typically lower down the card as well. Not necessarily as skilled as people, when he's working with Brian Danielson or John Moxley to bring up a feud from early 2020 that was incredible.
The thing he suffers from for me, I sound like the biggest Jericho defender in the world here, but I just get, I think the fact that there's so much fake hate out there and just meme-like hate, it kind of pushes me the other way to defend him, when really it's just a case of seeing people talk shite kind of gets you kind of riled up to kind of fight back for somebody.
Yep.
And it's, I think he suffers from the fact that he's a draw, and Tony wants him on TV because he's a draw. That's what it is at the end of the day. And you get all this, oh, Jericho's got to get himself on TV. Tony is a stats guy. Jericho does good numbers. You always see it when the numbers are out. His segments always do decent numbers. He takes the zones that the segments that would kill some younger talent who are trying to gain momentum, like the the double ab breaks and that kind of stuff. And he's willing to take them and because he's Chris Jericho and he can take them, and people know who Chris Jericho is.
He will take them because he's Chris Jericho and he wants to be on TV still.
Exactly. He knows what he can. He knows what he can give. Yeah.
I have to say there is a big touch of narcissism there. This is a man who he loves being in the ring. He loves the attention.
100%. He talks about himself as Chris Jericho. He doesn't say me or I. He says, the match with Chris Jericho was fantastic. There's clearly that. But he also knows that he is a draw. And so Tony will gladly want to have him on TV, wants him on pay-per-views because he's a name that outside of the wrestling audience, which, generally worldwide is niche. And, we've had that recently with people seeming to think that WrestleMania is bigger than the Super Bowl or bigger than the European Cup or the FA Cup or something. it's not. And so more people will know who Chris Jericho is than maybe know who Ricky Starks is, for instance, things like that. So he's going to be on the card. And because he's got to be on the card all the time, you're going to be overexposed. And especially when we were coming into this period of a TV negotiation, TV deal negotiation, Tony's going to want his biggest number guys on the card constantly, which is why we did not have a week without Chris Jericho on the card. And I feel like he suffers from that sometimes, from almost being too big. Like you say, he knows that he is, but also the fact that he generally is. So he's a benefit on the card. And regardless of whether the IWC decide to cry on Twitter over it, the general public seem to be enjoying it because they're tuning in.
That is a fair point. That is a fair point. And all I'll say in support of that is there is a rule on the Social Suplex Discord that is in force. And there is a strong policy to never count out Chris Jericho. So we'll leave it with that. Who knows what's going on right now? He'll probably come back again and we'll all love him again in 2 years' time. He'll do something incredible. Unless you've got anything else to add, Andy, I think we've talked a fair bit about this matchup and particularly about Chris Jericho. I personally don't have a whole lot more to say other than that. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we get out of here, mate?
No, just like I say, I feel like I've gone into full-on defense mode there, but it's mainly just because of the meme-like hate and, people seeing a 9 out of 10 Dynamite and deciding it's a 1 out of 10 because Chris Jericho did a 2-minute promo. He serves his purpose. He's there for a reason. And you will all miss Chris Jericho when he's gone, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Let's leave it at that. Andy, where can the good people find you if they want to reach out to you and tell you how wrong you are about Chris Jericho?
if you want to come and tell me how wrong I'm about Chris Jericho, you're wrong, by the way. I am on Andy Ric Flair on Twitter, and on Blue Sky, I'm Andy LaParker because I've had a rebrand. And you can also catch me on the Group Chat Wrestling podcast, which is GWP Podcast, I think. GW Podcast UK on Twitter, and it's GW Podcast UK on Blue Sky. And it's also now GW Podcast UK on YouTube. We currently upload the audio tracks with a still image, but we are actually going to go video very soon. Live. So yeah, we may have a live episode over Christmas with a few drinks. See what happens.
Very good, very good. Sounds good. I'll be linking all of those in the description. And as I said, I definitely recommend the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast. It's got a really good vibe to it. It's a fun thing to put on. I put it on when I was at work one day and very much enjoyed it, and I've been listening ever since. So definitely recommend that. And thank you to everyone who's listened. I really appreciate everyone who's tuned in. Where this is actually the last episode for the year that we're going to be doing of the match guide itself. I'll be coming back in a fortnight's time to do the Golden Wombats, my end of year awards for AEW. There's a few of the, you know, your classics. We've got the wrestlers of the year. We've got the tag team of the year. We've got the promo of the year. But we've also got some other stuff. We've got the nut trucker of the year. We've got the wet fart of the year. So make sure you tune in for those, you know, glorious and very prestigious awards, the Golden Wombats. That will be in a fortnight's time. So, Andy, thank you for joining me. I'll be coming back the next episode of the actual match guide itself. Will hopefully be in early 2025. And this hasn't been recorded yet, and plans are in place. But hopefully I'll be talking to the Tunnel Talk girls about Arcade Anarchy. Which should be very, very fun way to kick off the year. So that's what you've got coming up on the AEW Match Guide. But of course, you can tune into all of the other great shows we've got on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imp's WWE Adventure. And we'd really appreciate it if you could rate and review us. That would be much appreciated. Helps us get the word out there. You can also jump onto our YouTube where you can like us. And if you want to give us a Christmas gift, if you've been enjoying what we do, you can donate to us through Red Circle. There's links to that. You can do a regular donation, so a weekly or monthly donation, or you can do a once-off donation on there, either to a specific show or to the Social Suplex Podcast Network in general. And why stop at that? Get yourself, get your friends, get your family Social Suplex merch from Chop Tees for Christmas. They'll love it. They'll give you lots of hugs and kisses for it. You'll be the hero of Christmas if you provide everyone with Social Suplex merch from chopped-tees.com/social-suplex. Andy, thank you once again for joining me. It's been a pleasure to have you on. First time guest, and I'll definitely be having you back on in the future. We've already got plans for that. So looking forward to having you on again, mate. And thank you to all the listeners out there. I won't speak to you beforehand, so I wish you a Merry Christmas. Catch you later. Bye. Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide Podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.